Blog Talk Radio.
So you wanna occupy Wall Street, occupy Oakland, occupy Brooklyn, occupy New York,
occupy your mind,
occupy
positivity, occupy your time
constructively,
occupy your heart,
we'd love to share.
Occupy your soul
with a little prayer.
Occupy this, occupy that. Occupy your mind with positive thought of you doing the best you can to help yourself and others. Occupy your spirit to harmonize with all the spirits around you. Even the trees and flowers have a spirit. Occupy your time with building up your knowledge, building up your health, building your wealth of the ones you love and the ones who love you. Occupy your vision with those things you can see and change what you don't like and enhance those things that agree. Occupy your heart with love for everyone, even those who may not love you. Love is a warrior and will fight for her space. Occupy your appetite with wholesome food to eat and nourishing things to drink. Occupy your world with constructive conversation, good music, and stories with a happy ending. Occupy your soul with prayers and thanks to your God and all your ancestors that you have come this far. Occupy. Occupy.
Occupy your mind.
Your mind, your soul, and your spirit. Occupy.
Occupy your heart.
It's time to occupy.
With love to share. Occupy your soul.
With a little prayer.
For God the prophecy, I'm constantly praying into my pops to see. Making my properties a stop for thee. How the true rock consume souls, control from out of thee. Pockets of poverty, plague to show the way to mold it properly. Grow engaged and know you gotta be. So Father, please raise, compose inside the weak ways that's holding minds asleep. Unfolding paper road of quality, displayed over quantity. Cause time don't always lead what they assigned to be. Call on peace, alone to follow, leading focuses properly. Needing hope is designed to teach divine to reach. Wiser to choose means molded to shine, true and notice the signs. Through this opens the lines, movements, motions. I use devotion and rhyme tunes to open it. Finds wounds to soak in divine, soon is woken. Confused and broken to bloom, strive to rise, rise, despise, lies, tries. Be careful what you occupy.
Occupy,
occupy your mind.
Occupy.
With positivity.
Your mind, your soul,
occupy
and your spirit. Occupy, occupy.
Constructively.
Occupy your heart.
It's time to occupy.
With love to share.
Occupy your soul.
With a little prayer.
Occupy your mind
with positivity.
Occupy your time
constructively.
Occupy your heart
with love to share.
Occupy your soul
with a little prayer.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has
has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Greater Lang, revolutionary greeting, liberation our life, education for liberation. Welcome to another informative education and thought-provoking broadcast, Jordan Bush Radio. I'm your host, Luan Shakir. The Jordan University has 5 goals. Our first goal is eradicate cultural literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, reducing new African recidivism. Now, overall goal is to transfer the entire prison to slave complex into prison system to begin to learn it. And while we're doing that, we're transferring the mind state of the individual, the sisters and brothers that are inside from a swimming tide, wrestling tide, so they come to society, build institutions, create programs, purchase land, businesses, and decide social needs for the people. I want to thank everybody who's been joining our broadcast 2014. Thank everybody for kind of educating themselves in their community, respecting themselves, educating themselves as individuals to be a better productive individual, and a better person. At this time, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On February 11, 1898, Owen L.W. Smith of North Carolina, A.M.P. Zion Medicine Educator, named Minister to Liberia. Also in 1898, F.G. Farrell patented steam trap used in industry. 1826, Alfred Moore, a white man in North Carolina, offered a $20 reward to any white person who catches Joe, an enslaved new African man who ran away to visit his wife. In 1961, Robert Weaver sworn in as administrator of the Housing and Home Finance Agency, the highest federal post to date by a new African. In 1971, Whitney Young, National Urban League director, was drowned in Paris at the age of 49. In 1990, Nelson Mandela released from prison after 27 years. In 2007, Charles Langford, the lawyer who represented Rosa Parks, died. On February 12th, was today's date, in 1793. The first fugitive slave law enacted by Congress, the measure made it a criminal offense to harbor a fugitive slave or prevent his arrest. In 1853, Illinois legislation passed an act that barred new African settlers. The act said any new Africans who remain in the state for 10 days will be fined or into slavery. In 1865, Henry Highland Garnett, the first new African to speak in the capital, delivered more sermons on the abolition of slavery as service in the House of Representatives. In 1900, James Weather Johnson and his brother J. Rosamond Johnson composed Lift Every Voice and Sing the African-American National Anthem in Jacksonville, Florida. In 1909, NWC was founded under the leadership of W.E. Du Bois and I.D. Wells and many others. In 1946, Poland severely beat new African veteran, Sergeant Isaac Woodard, permanently blinded him, both protesting mistreatment by a white bus driver for traveling uniform on a bus trip from Georgia to North Carolina. In 1962, a bus boycott started in Macon, Georgia. On February 13, 1818, Absalom Jones, co-founder of the Free African Side and the first New African priest, died in Philadelphia at the age of 71. In 1882, Henry Highline Garnett, diplomat and protest leader, died in Monrovia, Liberia at the age of 66. In 1957, on the 13th to the 14th, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, organized a New Orleans meeting with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as the president. In 1960, National Students launched sit-in demonstrations demanding an end to racial segregation and lunch counter, face jail, and face jail time for doing so. In 1976, General M. Muhammad, progressive Nigerian leader, was killed during an unsuccessful counter coup. Also on this date, in 1993, Black Love Day was founded by Ayo Andy Hendy. On February 14th, 1760, Richard Allen, who has been called the father of the Negro and was the founder of the AME Church, was born in slavery in Philadelphia. 1817, Frederick Douglass, abolitionist, editor, diplomat, was born in Maryland. He was also born a slave. 1920, the first recording of a new African woman singer made by Mammy Smith recorded You Can't Keep a Good Woman Down on the OK label in New York City. In 1936, the National Negro Congress organized a Chicago meet attended by 817 delegates representing more than 500 organizations. A. Philip Randolph of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porter was elected president of the new organization. In 1945, an all-white grand jury refused to indict any of the six white men accused of raping Ms. Ricky Taylor in Abbeville, Alabama. They are never prosecuted. In 2018, author and historian Lerone Bennett Jr. died. Also, on February 14, 2001, Nwosu and Mansu Idu founded Akoma Day. Akoma Day is a seven-day Black Love holiday. Reference to this is the book Akoma Day, a guide into the sacred science of soul mating, a cultural alternative to Valentine's Day by Nwosu and Mansu Idu. Okay, February 15th, 1804, New Jersey passed a Graduate Emancipation Act to lay an end to slavery in the state for decades. In 1848, Sarah Roberts bought from white school in Boston. Her father, Benjamin Roberts, filed the first school integration suit on her behalf. In 1851, New African abolition invaded Boston courtroom and rescued a freed slave. In 1915, Ernest Jett, brilliant violinist, investigator, or destructive to fail, receive the PhD. 1965, Nat King Cole, singer and pianist, died in Santa Monica, California at age of 45. In 1968, Henry Lewis named first new African conductor of a major American orchestra. In 2003, in Oakland, at 35 years, Little Bobby Hutton's gravesite received a tombstone. In February 16th, 1847, Missouri outlawed the education of new African people and banned the immigration of free new African people into the state. In 1874, Frederick Douglass appointed president of Freedmen's Bank and Trust Company. In 1893, Dr. George E. L. Pass of Meharry Medical College, the first female graduate, received her medical degree. In 1943, St. Clair Bourne was born, who was a 1960 activist, filmmaker, focused on new African experience. In 1951, New York City Council passed a bill prohibiting racial discrimination and city-assisted housing development. In 1959, U.S. and other foreigners were defeated by Castro, becoming the premier of an independent revolutionary Cuba. In 1970, Joe Frazier knocked off Jimmy Ellis and became a world heavyweight boxing champ. February 17, 1870, Congress passed a resolution to reamend Mississippi on condition that we'll never change the Constitution to disenfranchise you Africans. In 1942, Dr. Huey P. Newton, co-founder of Black Power Self Defense, were born. In 1947, in Greenville, South Carolina, a white mob lynches Willie Earl, slashing chunks of flesh from his body before blasting him with a shotgun. 31 men were charged with a murder and were later acquitted. In 1961, Patrice Lumumba, the first prime minister of the former Congo, was turned over to his enemy and his successors, Katanga Province, and murdered. The event triggered major protests in the UN and in countries around the world by activists who said that Western intelligence agents were directly involved in the murder. 1974, the force of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was hung in the Georgia capital. In 1984, South Africa obtained from Angola a promise to withdraw support of SWAPO, which is a Namibian independent movement established in Angola in 1975. You know, those are the events that happened in history during this week. Of course, there are more, right? But the show must go on. And at this time, I'd like to welcome to our broadcast, welcome to our show, Sister Alantis Browder. Peace, Sister Alantis, how are you doing?
Peace, Brother Lomani. I'm doing well. How are you?
My strong favorite thing, sister. First of all, thank you for coming to our broadcast show. You know, you understand. Thank you for working with your past, present, and the future, right? At this time, tell the people about yourself so you know exactly who's speaking, where you're coming from, you know, this is the past. Tell the people about yourself. Who are you? Who is Alantis Browder?
Well, I, growing up as the daughter of Anthony Browder and becoming my working to become my own person, I've often been, you know, recognized as, you know, Tony Browder's daughter. But I'm always happy to tell people I am my own person, even though I've been influenced by my father. He's been such a great person in my life. But I am working to do a number of things, not only to continue my dad's work, but continue the legacy that he has helped me to create and pass that on to my new son, who will be 30 days old tomorrow. But who am I besides the daughter of Anthony? Thank you. Who am I besides the daughter of Anthony Browder? I am a person who truly understands, you know, thanks to my father, the importance of knowing who we are, knowing who I am as a person of African ancestry. That's something that has become a part of my essence. And I'm very grateful to have been introduced to knowledge and people who have helped to ground me in understanding the importance of embracing African history, culture, and spirituality. So that's first and foremost. That I was born and raised in the DMV area. For those who don't know, DMV stands for D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, born in Maryland. And I graduated from Bowie State University, which is in Maryland, with a degree in history and government. So my interest in history began at an early age, and so I pursued that as my career. After graduating from college, ended up going into the field of education, going into the classroom, teaching middle school, and later on high school students. But throughout my journey as an educator, working not just in the traditional classroom setting, but also with the CDF, the Children's Defense Fund Freedom School program, I've had an opportunity to bring forth to the students that I work with my experiences, my knowledge and my experiences as a person who got an opportunity to travel to Africa for the first time at the age of 7 years old. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I made my first trip to Africa when I was seven. Specifically, I went to the country that we now call Egypt. And it was at that time that I had an opportunity to see for myself what our ancestors had done thousands of years before we were enslaved by Europeans as well as Arabs. So that trip laid the foundation. You know, I had no way of knowing at that time, but it laid the foundation for the work that I'm doing today. After making that first trip, I wrote my first book, which was published at the age of 8. Since then, I've written 2 additional books about my trips to West Africa. My third book is about, it's an updated version of my first book, and I talk about, you know, why Egypt is so important, why I continue to travel there. But all of these things have allowed me to come, have kind of come full circle in terms of the work that I'm currently doing today, which has primarily been focused on curriculum writing. And so as you know, for the longest period of time, we have been written out of history. Our stories have not been told, and if they have been told, they've been told by people who don't look like us. And so it's important that we take hold of the pen and paper, that we put ourselves into a position where we can begin to write the curriculum. We can write these textbooks that can be used in school systems, not just for our children, even though our black children, our African-American children are our priority. But when we begin doing this work, we come to realize how all human beings have been miseducated, especially when it comes to African and African-American history. And so I've been enjoying for the past 5 or 6 years writing curriculum, which has been used in California, has been used in other states around the country to introduce young people to our history before slavery and helping them to understand the importance of history and culture and how that can be used to navigate life, but more importantly, how we can ground it and help us, you know, move forward to figure out who we are, what our purpose is, and how we can use our skills and talents to not only help ourselves, but help to build our community in general. So that's the long and short of who I am and a little bit about what I do.
Okay, I appreciate that. That was a lot to digest. I appreciate that. I understand that you're a historian, educator, consultant, and writer, right? On your perspective, what exactly is black history? And what does...
So what is black history and what does black history month mean to me? So before I answer that question from my own perspective, I do think it's important to acknowledge the person who founded what we know to be now as Black History Month. And, of course, that is Carter G. Woodson, who was the founder of Negro History Week, February 1926. And so a lot of people, or at least what I've come to realize over the years, is that we tend to have a superficial understanding and sometimes even a superficial celebration of Black History Month. But I remember a couple of years ago when I took the time to dig more into, you know, the origin of Negro History Week and why Carter G. Woodson, you know, started this celebration. What was his true intention? What were his goals, his short-term and his long-term goals? And one of the things that I learned, and I think it was, you know, was simple but yet profound, is that even though Carter G. Woodson started off the celebration of Negro history as 1 week, he had long-term goals, which were for this celebration to take place 365 days a year. But this was going to take some time, you know, it was a process. But his goal was to not only have it celebrated year-round, but to get this information in the classrooms so that black children could learn about their history. And he also worked diligently to make sure that the parents, adults, would have access to this information so that they, in their homes, can reinforce that their children are learning at school. But up until that point, up until being able to get you know, black history and the celebration, the setting and celebration of it in our schools, education starts at home. And so, you know, just in brief, for me, and I'm embracing an aspect of what Black History Month meant to Carter G. Woodson and why he started it and what was the long-term goal So one, for it to be celebrated year-round, and two, Black History Month or Negro History Week at that time was not supposed to be just, you know, some celebration and learning about a bunch of facts, but in essence, the purpose of Black History celebration was to demonstrate the things that we have learned, the things that we have done throughout the entire year. And so when that following year comes, you know, we're celebrating those achievements. We're celebrating what we've done. We're celebrating the progress that we've made, whether it was, you know, within ourselves, within our families, you know, within our homes or within our communities. So those are the two most important things that stand out for me when I think about what Black History means, you know, and why it's important and what we need to do or what we should consider in terms of celebrating Black History.
Okay. I appreciate that. You said an interesting statement in regards to that Black History is year-round, right? For the people that are listening, the people who are listening in the future, right, can you expound on that?
I'm sorry, can I expound on what?
Can you expound on the statement you said that Black History is 365 days a year, right? Can you expand on that?
Right, absolutely. So first and foremost, you know, once you begin scratching the surface and learning about African and African American history, well, first of all, you know, we reference Black history. So it's kind of boxed in with, you know, Black American history or African American history. But I do believe, I don't believe, because a belief is something you accept without proof, but I know without a shadow of a doubt that our history as people of African ancestry didn't begin in this country. To only begin our history once we arrived in this country in 1619, I think that's a disservice and it's dishonorable to our ancestors. And so it is important that we make the connection to our history before we came to this country and join that together. So that's why when I make references to studying not just African American history, but African history, who were we before we came to this country? What was our connection to our history and our culture before we came here? And just understanding the process that our ancestors went through in terms of being separated from their history, their culture, and their identity. So in essence, when we talk about celebrating our history 365 days a year, we have to understand that there's so much information for us to know, for us to study about our history, and we can't relegate it to just one month, let alone the shortest and the coldest month of the year. You know, we don't have European History Month. Why is that? Because year-round, you're studying the history of white folks. You know, their history, their culture dominates our curriculum. And so I think that it's important for us to understand that we don't have to just celebrate, it's more of a disservice to just relegate and try to squeeze everything in as far as our accomplishments. As people of African ancestry, you should try to squeeze it into one month. There's so much more to learn, and it's more than enough for us to study 365 days a year. And so I think one of the most important things when it comes to studying and celebrating and showcasing our history and our people, our accomplishments, our progress. I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. All right, well, it'll come back to me. So in essence, you know, we're studying, we're celebrating our history 365 days a year. But the most important thing when it comes to this process is application. So in 1982, my father started a business called IKG. It originally stood for the Institute of Karmic Guidance. But over the years, he found that some people were resistant to this concept of karma. And so he modified the name of the business to Information plus knowledge equals growth. IKG, information plus knowledge equals growth. And so we, you know, gain information through reading, you know, watching documentaries, having conversations with the elders and other individuals who are more knowledgeable than us. We gain this information. We become familiar with it. We take time to understand it, to go deeper with it. And that becomes knowledge. That's what makes it knowledge. So we know it. We understand it. But it can't just stop there. It's important for us to understand that we have to be able to apply what we learn. If we gain all this information, we're reading all this, all these books, you know, keeping it to ourselves and not doing anything really with that information, it's useless. And so we have to be able to apply what we've learned, even if it's something as simple as learning to love yourself just a little bit more than you did previously, whether it's a piece of knowledge and information that inspires you to do something. Knowledge must be, must have practical application, and so that leads to the G. So information plus knowledge equals growth. Once we apply what we know, and that leads to growth and transformation. And of course, depending on what our initial goal is, that determines the, you know, the trajectory of our journey. But ultimately, the most important thing that we have to understand in terms of studying our history year round is that we have to be able to apply what we know about our history, what we've learned. And if you can't apply it, then it's useless.
True indeed. And I know, you had mentioned in your bio that you, like you said, freely that you create a curriculum developer, right? If a person wanted to get, involved with that, right, and you're creating a curriculum, what would they have to do first? And also, if a person wanted to get you to create a curriculum for them, how would they go about doing their process and go out and get in touch with the creative curriculum? That's my two parts.
Okay, and I didn't make out your first question. Can you repeat that for me?
Okay, the first part is if a person were interested in creating curriculum, right? If a person interested in creating curriculum, then they ask you how to do so. Could you tell them, like, what actually would be the first step that you recommend, or what's something you recommend to do first when going to create curriculum?
So, I'll give two responses to that question. And just speaking from my own experience, I think one of the most beneficial things to helping me write curriculum was, number one, my experience as an educator. My experience working in the classroom with young people, having an opportunity to see the curriculum that was provided to me to teach to my students, seeing the textbooks that were purchased for me to use in the classroom, and recognizing what was missing. And typically what was missing was that, number one, these curriculum, these textbooks weren't written by people who look like us. And they wrote us out of history. And if they did reference anything about our past, it was something, you know, just a paragraph, something very short in comparison to the other subject matters that were addressed. So being able to see that firsthand, how we've been written out of history, I knew that it was important for me, especially someone who grew up exposed to this information, and now I'm working with students who, you know, don't know anything about the history before slavery. And some of the things that they do know about the history after slavery is the same, you know, basic things. You know, back in the 90s, you know, we all acknowledged Rosa Parks, Frederick Douglass, Martin Luther King, and of course not to take anything away from those individuals because they definitely laid some important groundwork for us to do the work that we're doing today. But there's so many other historical figures, cultural figures, who have created change in our country. And so, essentially, I was able to incorporate my experiences, bring my knowledge into the classroom, and have discussions, come up with my own activities, supplement some of the assignments that I might have been required to teach. Fortunately, in two of the middle school and even the high school, actually, you know, all three educational settings that I worked in over the years, I was very fortunate to have administrators who were not only familiar with my work, but allowed me the flexibility to incorporate things into my classroom. So once, you know, I was able to do that and do it freely, I began to see how my students were impacted by this information that they had never heard before. I'll share this one quick story with you. When I was teaching DC history to my 12th grade students at a public charter school here in Washington, D.C., and it was considered an alternative school, so many of the students, you know, had been kicked out from other schools, but in D.C. history, I used my father's book, Egypt on the Potomac, and this is a book that was written by my dad that is centered on our Egypt on the Potomac field trips. These are field trips that we do in Washington, D.C., where we take groups around the city on a bus and show you how the founding fathers, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, how they how they were knowledgeable about African history and how they incorporated Egyptian or Kemetic history into the history, architecture, symbolism, into the design and layout of Washington, D.C. And so we show you, you know, take you around the city to help you to see that for yourself. And so I use that book in my classroom. And, you know, where students read portions of that book, we had discussions, and ultimately, after we finished reading the book, I took them on the Egypt on the Potomac field trip. But what was most interesting, before we even did the field trip, we were, you know, reading one of the chapters, and I had a male student who interrupted me in, you know, in the middle of my talking and said, you know, Ms. Browder, why are we just now learning about this information? And when he asked this question, he was, you know, visibly upset. He was really concerned, like he was, you know, genuine about this question. And so immediately after he asked that question, some of the other students, you know, chimed in, yeah, you know, why are we just now learning about this? And I said, that's an excellent question. And I said, well, that's the reason why I'm taking the time to teach this to you now, because I don't know if you'll ever have another adult, another instructor in your studies that will introduce you to this information. I'm obligated to share what I know with you, right? And so, you know, they appreciated it, and it really kind of opened the door for a whole other conversation. But it let me know that, you know, they were making the connections. These children were about to graduate from high school, 17, 18 years old, and for the first time in their life, they're learning something positive about their history before slavery. And so, you know, that's just one of many examples in terms of how I was able to see the impact of what I was sharing with these students. But number one, they wanted to know this information. They were soaking it all up. They were excited to learn about this information. And even years later, after I left that school, I've kept in contact, and some of my students have found me on social media to tell me, you know, to thank me, you know, Ms. Prada, thank you so much for teaching me that information, you know, and they would kind of go through the list of the things that they remember from 6, 7, 8 years ago as far as what they learned. So by having this experience and seeing the impact, I was able to use that to help me write the curriculum. And so oftentimes I have come to find that many of the people who write curriculums, they don't have any experience in the classroom. And so I think it is important, in my opinion, it's important to have experience working with young people, especially in the subject matter that you want to write curriculum about, but to get that experience. So outside of that, you know, technically anybody can write a curriculum. You know, you have to be familiar, you know, do your research about the subject matter, and understanding what's going to guide this process, because you have teacher-centered curriculum, and then you also have student-centered curriculum. And I won't go into all those details, but those who, you know, might be interested in writing curriculum, I encourage you to, you know, go online and Google what's the difference between the two. And so my curriculum focuses on the student's learning process, not giving them all the answers, but allowing them to engage in activities where they can come up with the question, answers on their own. And all we as adults do is to facilitate that process by asking them questions and encouraging them to think critically and go deeper. We ask them a question, they give a response, and we take that response and ask them another question. We keep going deeper and deeper until they're able to come to the answer themselves, to come to some sort of conclusion. So that's another thing that I would suggest as far as someone who's interested in writing curriculum. And also seeing what's out there, seeing the other curriculums that are out there with the population that you want to work with, also with that subject matter, and thinking about your own educational experience. You know, a lot of our people may not have had the best experience in school, especially interacting with their teachers. And so thinking about what would have made your learning experience more pleasant, what would you have liked to learn, how can you make it fun and engaging? You know, we don't have to use just text to convey information, incorporating multimedia, and just, you know, accessing the technology that's available today to be able to educate our children in different ways. So those are a few points related to your first question. And for those who might be interested in some of the curriculum that I've done, two of them, one is an online high school curriculum, which is only available for students in California in a particular district. So that isn't necessarily available to the public, as well as another one that I did for elementary students in California. But two that are available, one is the curriculum that I wrote for the Coastal Imperatives Program. We actually have plans to roll that out for the 2024 season. This particular program is specifically for high school students, 9th through 12th grade. And this curriculum is centered around my father's first publication, From the Bodophile, which he wrote in 1989 and is still a bestseller. Much of the information in that, actually all of the information in that book, is still relevant today. And so this program is 5 months. Students meet one Saturday a month over the course of January through May, and they read, select articles, and engage in the activities that are associated with them in the curriculum. And so this is, you know, often considered a more, well, it's a Saturday school. So we've had individuals within the community bring this program to their city. Thus far, we've had CIP in Texas, Louisiana, California, New York, New Jersey, Florida, Ohio. We've had a number of community members bring this program to their cities. And we've also had some schools, some educators who work within the school system who said, you know, our children need this. And they brought it, you know, they sold it to their administrators and brought it to their schools. So that's the Cultural Imperatives Program. People can go on our website, which is ikg-info.com, so you can go on our website to get a little bit more information about CIP, Cultural Imperatives Program. But people can also follow up with me directly at atlantisbrowder@gmail.com, and I'll be able to provide more information about how they can bring CIP to their city. And the second curriculum that just rolled out last year is a culturally relevant STEM program. And this is a nine-month program. It can typically be implemented, or it's designed to be implemented on a Saturday, but we've had some schools who have, you know, done this through their after-school program. But this is a program specifically for African-American elementary school students. third through fifth grade, and they have an opportunity to engage in STEM, but I've also embedded some other activities that will introduce them to African and African American history. That curriculum can be accessed, so you can get more information by going on, just if you go online and if you Google the ABEN STEM Initiative, ASI, ABEN, A-B-E-N, STEM Initiative, and that'll take you to the ABEN website where you can learn information about that culturally relevant STEM curriculum.
Okay, I appreciate that. I understand that you read three books, right? My first part of the question is, how can these books be attained, and also have you used any of these books to develop in your curriculum?
Yeah, so my first book is called My First Trip to Africa, so that's the book that I published when I was 8. That book is currently out of print. Because we have ultimately revised it. So my latest publication, my third book, is called Reflections of My First Trip to Africa. So in this new version, I have kind of incorporated some of the same information from my first book, but I've also added a couple of new chapters. Since 1989, when I made my first trip, I've been to Egypt at least 19 additional times, so I talk about why I continue to travel to Egypt every year, and I talked about, you know, how that's impacted us. I also talked a little bit about the Acer Restoration Project, where we are excavating temple tombs of the 25th dynasty, who are Kushites. But that book, as well as my second book, which is called Africa on My Mind, Reflections of My Second Trip to Africa, that book is about my travel to West Africa, Ghana, Senegal, Gambia, and the Ivory Coast. So in that book, I talk about how our ancestors got from Africa to the Americas and what that experience was like. But those two books can be purchased on our website, which is ikg-info.com, ikg-info.com.
Okay, I appreciate that. I understand that using a documentary, two documentaries, Out of God and Out of God, Heavy is the Crown. For the people who haven't seen those, right, how exactly was it to be on the live, or be on the big screen, like, to share your information? You know what I'm saying? How did it make you feel, you know what I'm saying, in regards to your confidence, your knowledge? How did it make you feel? How was the experience? And also, how can people see those documents?
The brother who produced that film, his name is Chris Reiser. He's from California, a very talented brother. And I want to say I first met him in 2012, 2013, my father and I, we had flown out to San Jose, California to do a speaking engagement, and this brother Chris was there, and he asked if he could, you know, do this interview. And so, you know, we had no idea then, one, what his talents were, but that it would evolve into this, you know, magnificent documentary, Out of Darkness. But I definitely, after you know, getting to know the brother, and then after being able to see the documentary, I was blown away by the brother's, you know, graphic skills, his visual and artistic skills, visual arts, videography, and artistic skills. So I was, you know, honored to be able to be a part of that project and to be able to be in a documentary with other phenomenal historians and scholars. You know, it was definitely an honor. There's also a Out of Darkness Part 2, Heavy is the Clown. And so if you go online, I know it's on a couple of different platforms, and forgive me for not having that specific information, but if you go online and you Google Out of Darkness by Chris Lizer, you'll be able to find the platforms that it's available on.
Okay. I appreciate that. You know, to add on to that, right, you actually watched both of those documentaries on an app called Tubi that you can download to your TV. You watch them on Tubi for free. Both of those are documentaries, which are excellent documentaries. You watch them both on Tubi.
What's the name of it?
T-U-B-I. You can download the app Tubi, T-U-B-I, Tubi, on Tubi. You watch both of them on Tubi for free. The Tubi is a free app. You can watch all the documentaries, both of the documents on there, on Tubi. My next question is, what exactly does your name, what does Atlantis mean? What does that mean? What does it signify?
Well, most people know of Atlantis either from the Isley Brothers song, Voyage to Atlantis, or they know about it historically from writings by Plato about a lost city or a lost continent that is now somewhere underwater.
About where Atlantis is at.
But it is a place in which, you know, from what I understand, was a city or a continent in which the people who lived there had extraordinary abilities, had the ability to communicate telepathically. They were able to move things with their minds, telekinesis, but they had extraordinary skills that the average person today would call magic or probably doesn't even believe in. But from my understanding of information in a book by called The Introduction to he talks about the place of Atlantis and how these people, with their knowledge, before or when their home was destroyed, whether it was by an earthquake or some natural disaster, that some of these survivors actually traveled to ancient Egypt or Kemet, and they were able to share their knowledge of pyramid building and many other things. And so my father got the idea, was inspired to name me Atlantis as a result of reading that book, The Introduction to African Civilization by John Jackson. And I was his first daughter, initially his first daughter at the time. And so Atlantis kind of indicating the first. My middle name is actually Ta'i, T-Y-E, named after Queen Ti. And then she came in, she was the grandmother of King Tut, and the mother of Akhenaten. But my father, on his journey to learning about African history and culture, wanted to give me a name that had meaning. And so, you know, he named me Ta'i. And what's also significant about my name is that my father and I, we have the same initials. He's Anthony Tyrone Browder. I'm Atlantis Ta'i Browder. And so my father was very intentional about the energy, our energy and us connecting, and also the idea that, you know, I chose to come through him. You know, we had an agreement before I was born to do the work that we're doing now. And so just to connect us and align things even further, we decided to name me Atlantis Ta'i, and, you know, us share the same initials.
That sounds wonderful. It's a beautiful explanation. A lot of history, a lot of education, you know, stemming the mind of others. At this time, right, you get people your final thoughts, the final thoughts you want to leave us with
Final thoughts. Well, the most important thing that I feel is necessary to leave people with is that we as spiritual beings having a human experience, we have a lot more power than we've been taught to create our own reality, to influence this reality that we live in. And there's multiple realities, and it's a matter of understanding which reality you want to live in. And without going too deep, I really just want to encourage people to get to know themselves, to know who they are as not only people of African ancestry, but as spiritual beings. We're connected to the source that we can't see, and this source has infinite power. And I feel that throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia, we've come to know about people who have tapped into this infinite power, this divine power to do some amazing things. And they have gone down in history for doing just that. But most importantly, those individuals helped us to understand that we can tap into the same energy that they tapped into. And it's all for the purpose of understanding who we are, why we're here. We have so many lessons that we need to learn. And so while we all may be, you know, having our own journey, having our own experience, things kind of come ultimately full circle. So I feel that knowledge of self is something that can be incorporated into any career, whether it's science, whether it's technology, whether it's art, you know, dance and music. It truly is important for us to understand who we are as spiritual beings, but also as people of African ancestry. And so I think the essence of, you know, our purpose, our journey, is love, loving self, loving others, but also how we can unite as spiritual beings so that we can create a place on earth, on this planet, where future generations can be grateful for the investment that we made, not just because we're living each day for ourselves, but we're living each day and, you know, doing our best to create a future for those who have yet to be born, a future that they can be proud of. But then more importantly, preparing them to do the same for the next generation. So that's the message that I would like to leave with your listeners today.
Okay. I actually appreciate those words. You know, again, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast. Share now to understand. Thank you for working in past, present, and future, right? And also, I want to send positive energy away on your newborn. Send positive upon you and all your endeavors for success. And I want to thank you for continuing to do the work and create your own legacy for the future to be, right? You know, that's a beautiful thing. You know, and also at this time, I'd like to let everybody know that we had New Affirmation Day taking place by John Clark, which is Columbus, Georgia, at the end of the 2503 Dawson Street, Columbus, Georgia, 3103. It's going to take place March 29th, March 31st. Also, if anybody has any little one coming to suicide in your line, if you're looking at Georgia University, our website, www.georgejacksonuniversity.edu.com. And also, for more information on New Affirmation Day, you go on our social media pages, Freedom of Hunger Africa on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Also, go on our website, www.pg-rd.com. And also, you can go on our social media page, Georgia University, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more information as well by Georgia University. The Law of Resistance, Law of the Independent Movement, Law of the Gorilla. And all remember, educate for liberation and be the better version of yourself. I'm going to say peace.
Peace. Thank you for having me.
Peace. You're welcome, sister. Well, boys, we hit the jackpot this time.
MCE in the building. Y'all know what time it is. Yeah.
Been in my house picking up some weight, been picking up some weight, cause I wanna cut that 230 down to 208. It's like 230 now, I ain't ate since 208. Hungry than the mug in the kitchen picking up some weight. A minute, my decision of what I eat is a reflection of what's in me. I take the direction of what's in me, I'm making corrections of what's in me, what's in we. G-O-D, E-O-B, C-E-D until we F-I-E-E-R-B-G until we Cooper Freaky. Work on my conditioning, fight of the condition we in. Unhealthy, it's unhealthy, it don't matter what religion you in, don't matter what tradition you in, don't matter what position I'm in, positioning myself to be in position of persistence into the years of growing wise and growing old, but time to compromise and comfortable, to accomplish just to come and go, working out machine, come and go, to the fair with the friends who only come and go, when the fair with the end is only speak slow, outside, we outside, hitting the road, let's go.
I've been working on myself, steady building up my temple, gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental, eat to live. Living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation in the making for myself. I don't resemble. I've been working on myself, steady building up my temple. Gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental. Eat to living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation in the making for myself. I don't resemble. Shungo, Harold Cootie, spirit bold, on a move, on a go, comedic drip, draped in gold. G-O-D, I am the mold, flipping the script, discovering the rhyme, remembering the grip. Now I pay for my kind, that hood ain't the same. The weather is strange, I see the planes, you think it's a game. Building my immunity, my people war for unity. Your favorite rapper's eulogy, he's selling death to families. The system must dismantle it, please believe they handle it. This shit gon' burn, candle it, RBG gon' handle it. 50 in a clip, set up, push up, crunches, dips. Alkaline my water sip, trip like Black Star Line and shit. Bridget, lion, panthers, wild dogs, speak your peace. Found out my regimen, be healthy, man. Fruits and veggies, whole grains, you dehydrated. Constipated rappers need a detox. Astronomical precision in alignment, equinox. Flexing my complexion, melanated, lethal weapons. Channel my aggression in myself, I made plenty investments. I've been working on myself, steady building up my temple. Gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental. Eat to living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation. In the making for myself, I don't resemble. I've been working on myself, steady building up my temple. Gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental. Eat to living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation. In the making for myself, I don't resemble.
I try to figure out, I wanna see, can I believe what my mind's telling me? Feel it in my body, feel it in my soul. Do I succumb to it? Do I let go? Foundation's falling, no longer whole. Try to stay up, but it's breaking my soul. Don't break my spirit, don't break the mold. Don't leave me hanging out in the cold. Cause they wanna see you empty. Even though you got plenty.
Working on myself, steady building up my temple. Gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental. Eat to living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation. In the making for myself, I don't resemble. I've been working on myself, steady building up my temple. Gains on top of gains, health as well, monumental. Eat to living by the code, it's embedded in my mental transformation. In the making for myself, I don't resemble.